Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our guest today is Pete Nichols. Pete has a background as a physicist, an organisational psychologist. He's a father. And most importantly, he's the new CEO of Parents Beyond Breakup, a suicide prevention charity. So, Pete, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. And congratulations on being appointed as the new Chief Executive Officer of Parents Beyond Breakup. There's been a long association between Dads on the Air and the predecessor, Dads in Distress. It goes back to 2007, I think, when we introduced one of your predecessors, Tony Miller. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if you could tell our listeners a little bit of your background, how you came to be involved in supporting parents this way.
Sure. Well, I mean, I guess first and foremost, the most important thing is I'm a parent and a dad myself. And I guess back in 2001, I went through a relatively traumatic separation of my own. At that time, I had a five-year-old daughter. I was working from home as an organizational psychologist, as you've mentioned, at that time, and I was the primary carer. And after we separated, I kind of lost touch to a great extent with my daughter for the next 11 years or so. So really, until she was about 15, we didn't really have any consistent contact. So for long periods of time, I either didn't see her or saw her very sporadically for a few moments here and there. Now, that was back in the UK, as you can probably tell from my accent. But during that period of 11 years, I went through pretty difficult times. I was probably in and out of family court perhaps 100 times or so in that period of time. It works a bit different in the UK from Australia. Things happen a lot more often. You don't have these long periods of time that you tend to see in Australia. But I did get involved with campaigning. I guess more importantly to this conversation and my involvement with Parents Beyond Breakup or Dads in Distress, as it was known previously, was really there was a low point probably about 7 or 8 years in my struggle. And at that point, I was left homeless. I didn't have an income. I was living in the back of a van, just traveling the country, looking at the stars at night, wondering where my life was going, if I was ever going to see my kid. And a couple of times I was pretty suicidal. It has a happy ending, though, because after 11 years, I got full custodial care of my daughter, then aged 15, nearly 16. We moved to Australia for a great new life together, and things are fantastic now. But when I first came to Australia, I came across Dads in Distress, which is pretty unique, I'd say, across the developed world. There's nothing quite like it. So we're very lucky to have that in Australia. And, you know, immediately decided, how can I help this? I wish I'd had it back in the UK. I didn't. So originally became a volunteer, acting as a facilitator. I opened up a couple of new groups in the Sydney area and then joined the board to help steer the organization. And then back in April, I was asked to step down and take on the role of the CEO, which is where I'm at.
But now it's Parents Beyond Breakup. What was the thinking in that? Was it perhaps to make it more gender inclusive? Because there's also mums in distress now, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. So in fact, when we started back in 1999 in Coffs Harbour with Tony Miller, one of the previous guests here, wonderful man. His focus and the organization's focus at the time when it was first formed as Dads in Distress was to actually support dads, which is the big missing piece, if you like, in support for people going through separation. That said, around 5 or 7 years ago now, so around the 2010 mark, I guess, we noticed that we were getting more and more mums actually turning up at the groups as well. And so today, I mean, that's grown. So the organization was called Dads in Distress, but it formed a service below that, which was called Mums in Distress. And then and now, probably about 5 to 15%, it varies from month to year, from 1 month to next year, 1 year to next, of the people that we support are actually mums walking through our doors. And at some point, I guess, about 2 years ago, it made sense for us to say, well, actually, we're looking after both mums and dads, predominantly dads. And was it time for a rebrand? So we formed a new organization called Parents Beyond Breakup. And we've retained the names Mums in Distress and Dads in Distress as services of the parent company, Parents Beyond Breakup.
You've mentioned the mums coming along. Would they actually come to a meeting of the previous dads in distress?
They did. They did. And in most cases, that was absolutely fine. We always ask, you know, whenever there's a man that might turn up at a mum's group or a mum that turns up at a dad's group, we ask all the other participants if they're okay with that. We have to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, some people may still be in a relatively sensitive situation and they find it difficult to talk in front of someone of the opposite gender. And in most cases, people are fine with it. But we also did realize that it was difficult for some people. So at that point, we decided from a policy perspective that we should actually separate the groups and have specific groups for mums, specific groups for dads. And that's where we are now. So we have about 18 groups around the country, of which 4 or 5 are mums groups and the rest are dads.
So the principal activity would be conducting these sorts of meetings. Mm-hmm. Now, could you just tell us how a meeting would go? I mean, if someone didn't know what happened, is there any reason why he might be a bit intimidated by turning up at a meeting like this?
Oh, that's a really good question. It's quite natural to feel that way. I mean, I remember the very first meeting I went to, I felt exactly the same. But the groups are very inclusive in terms of, you know, it's a very friendly atmosphere. It's, if we look at the dads in distress groups as an example, it's a bunch of guys who are all going through exactly the same thing, sitting in a circle. The groups are broken down into two halves, where the first half is where people get to speak solely to the rest of the group about their situation. And there's no pressure to say anything if you don't want to. You can share your story where you're at, or you don't have to. So people can just come along and listen, if nothing else. We typically have a break. And then in the second half, we, as a facilitator of the group, I might select a common theme that emerged from the stories we heard in the first half. And then the group effectively share a little bit of wisdom around what do we all know about that situation? What did we all experience? We're not really there to give advice as such. We're there to share perspectives, alternatives for the guys in the room. So as someone who's new, someone who's a little bit nervous, there's no need to participate in any way. And you generally find most people will feel comfortable within the first 20, 30 minutes and start contributing, but there's no need. I mean, there are people who come 2 or 3 weeks in a row, just listen, they learn a bit, and then suddenly they're happy to participate. So there's nothing to be frightened of.
And do you have like a speaking shell or something, like someone talks when they're holding it and everyone else listens? Is that the way it works?
That's right. Well, with the first half, it's really around empathy. So the reason I share that is the whole group is there to listen to the one person's situation, the challenges that they're facing. So the way we do that, and this started from day one, is that we have a rock. Now, some groups operate on a slightly different system, but it's predominantly a rock. And whoever wants to share their piece picks up the rock from a table in the center. Sometimes the facilitator might hand the rock around. And that individual then is the only person that speaks. So it's a little bit like the talking stick idea, but we do it with a rock. And, you know, they can share. They don't have to share. They can pass the rock on. But one person at a time speaks. And it's the second half where it becomes more of a group discussion.
Okay, so if some of the people present at the meeting wanted to ask questions, do they have to wait till they get their hands on the rock, or how does that work?
So at the very beginning of the first half, we actually explain the purpose of the first half. And the purpose is literally for the individual sitting in the circle to actually share their story where they're at that time. So if it's the first time you've been, then it would be a case of introducing who you are, what your situation, family breakdown situation is. If you're a returning attendee, it typically is what's been happening since I last came. So it could be, you know, what's happened in the last week or so. We explain that really that's a one-way communication. And we explain at the beginning as well that after a break, after the first half, there's a break, and then we're going to get into a discussion. People do ask questions in the first half, but we just retain a respectful silence so that, you know, we keep the conversation to the second half. It's quite important that people are focused on that individual, listening to their story and thinking about what that person's going through. And that can't really happen if you're having a multi-way conversation. So we're quite strict on that, but we've discovered it's the way to ensure that people feel comfortable, that they're not going to be challenged in any way as well. So if I'm sharing my story, I need to know that if I say something, people aren't going to start arguing with me or being judgmental. Mm. So critical that only one person at a time speaks.
Well, just on that subject of questions, we're going to have a break now and listen to a song from Peter, Paul and Mary that poses 9 questions. It's written by Bob Dylan. It's called Blowin' in the Wind.
Blowin' answer is blowing in the wind. How many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? How many ears must one man
That was Blown in the Wind by Peter, Paul and Mary, singing a well-known Bob Dylan song. And we're speaking today with Pete Nichols, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Parents Beyond Breakup. You've mentioned what happens at these meetings. The Parents Beyond Breakup is described as a suicide prevention charity. So can you perhaps tell us what you do in that area, what the charity's work is?
Yes. So one of the things that we know, particularly for dads, it applies to mums as well, from official government statistics. And in fact, the best source of this kind of information, by the way, relating to suicide in parental separation is from the Queensland Suicide Registry. It's a 10-year study looking at, what are the causes behind the endemic of suicide that exists in Australia and across the Western world. But here in Australia, we're quite lucky that we have that QSR data. Now, what that tells us is that around one in four people who take their lives in Australia today do so related to a traumatic separation, particularly where there is a custodial issue. So if we were to look at some of the typical factors that might put someone at risk of suicide, they are things like loss of job, loss of income, loss of your partner, your life partner, loss of access to children, severe financial difficulties. All of those tend to coincide at the same time in a difficult, high-conflict separation. You could say that the primary aim behind the organization is to actually, help avoid that situation.
When people talk about suicide, in the next breath, they usually say, oh, there must be some mental health issues. But you're focusing on other issues, external issues, rather than the mental health.
That's right. Well, again, if we were to look at the best available research that exists in Australia, one of the things that we know is that the majority of suicide amongst females tends to be linked to mental health situations. If we look at male suicide, it tends to be based on external factors. So one, it's the loss of job, it's the loss of home, my role in life as a man, as a father. So you could say that it's the external factors that drive male suicide, it's the internal factors that drive female suicide. And so there is a term that's emerged in the last few years called situational distress. And situational distress is my reaction as a human being to external factors like loss of job, loss of access to my children. And we now know that around 60% of male suicide, and males form the majority of suicides in Australia, are actually caused by external factors. So intervening in those external factors prevents a man getting to the point of saying, I can't do this anymore. It doesn't quite work the same with females.
And the numbers, you just mentioned them briefly, but if you're saying one in four of male suicides are related to these family breakup issues.
That's right, actually it would be. So if we're looking at men in particular, you'd be looking at around 10 suicides per week related specifically to separation, breakdown and custodial issues.
Yeah, that's way too high, isn't it? Even one a week would be, even one a year would be too many.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned what the procedure at a meeting is. How do you see the Parents Beyond Breakup as addressing this issue of suicidality?
Well, okay, so again, if we were to examine the typical common factors that lead particularly to men taking their life, it tends to be one of two things. The first is a sense of isolation. You can get yourself into a pattern of thinking I'm the only person that's experiencing this, or at least within my circle, so I feel isolated. And if we're looking at things like relationship breakdown, where, you know, both parties may be throwing allegations at each other across a family court, then you can get to the point where some pretty extreme allegations are made. And if you happen to be on the receiving end of those, it can be very embarrassing, you know, whether it's violence or something more extreme. So you can start feeling this overwhelming sense of isolation. The second factor, other than isolation, is a sense of hopelessness, which is I've run out of money. I can't keep going back to court. I'm finding it too stressful. I can't work and focus on this issue. I don't see any way through this. The sense of isolation has meant that I'm shunned by others around me who don't know the truth, potentially. The presence of those two things, isolation, hopelessness, leads to men taking their lives. And what we do at the organization is to address both of those simultaneously. It may sound very simple, but just putting those guys in the room together immediately removes the sense of isolation. I'm not the only one going through this. And for some of those, you know, going back to your earlier question, do people feel comfortable talking, or what's it like to attend the first time? Sometimes these guys are a little bit nervous when they turn up, but they soon find out that there's 20 other guys in the room going through a near identical situation. So suddenly the sense of isolation goes, and you tend to find that the groups create quite strong little social networks. So they'll tend to see each other, they'll go out eat with each other, etc., for a meal or something along those lines. So that isolation is removed almost immediately the moment you walk through the door. The second half of the meeting that I spoke about, which was, you know, sharing the wisdom, alternatives, options for people, starts to chip away at the sense of hopelessness very quickly. And certainly when you've got, you know, older guys like me who've been through it, I've survived it, I have my daughter with me now, our story has a very happy ending. In fact, I get on extremely well with my former wife now. We co-parent extremely well. But for a very long time, that didn't happen. For some of the younger guys who may be in their early 20s, have just gone through this for the first time with a young baby, my story and others like it in that second half provide them some hope that there is a way to navigate this. You can survive it. Mm-hmm. So just addressing those two things alone has an astonishing impact. You know, and if I put some numbers around it, with my background in organizational psychology, one of the things that I've been quite hot on is getting some real numbers to get a sense of how effective are we. And so, for example, we know that from a very simple, quick survey that the guys take, takes a few seconds when they turn up at a group for the first time, and on an ongoing basis, each week they come in, there's a little sign-in that they do on a mobile phone. It's a little app that we've developed. We know that 51% of the parents that turn up for the first time have some level of suicidality around them. So they have an ideation around taking their life. We know that by the third week of working with them, assuming they come the 3 weeks, that's down to zero. So that's an astonishing level of performance. And it's very heartening for me that we're having that impact.
It is, and it's an extraordinary success for Parents Beyond Breakup, and I commend you also for promoting this problem, getting Australia to come to grips with it. And I understand you've had some particular involvement with the insurance industry in relation to this.
Yes, we have. Probably not at a stage where I could talk very openly about that, but very proud to say that we are talking to the large insurance providers. They have particular challenges of their own. You know, the large insurance companies cover both life insurance and they cover, you know, medical bills, mental health support. And it's costing them in the region of, well, to put it bluntly, if we look at the top six, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars worth of payout every year. And as an industry, as soon as they've started to hear that there are ways to intervene at a much earlier stage to prevent people getting to the point where they might take their life, where they might be prevented from having a complete collapse, mental collapse, where they're then drawing upon the insurance payouts. We have an interesting ally in the sense that these people are motivated to say, well, there must be a better way of dealing with this. I think they're getting to the point where they're paying out hundreds of millions of dollars in claims, but they're also paying an enormous amount of money out to the medical industry, and there has to be a better way of addressing this. So, yeah, there's some good things coming just over the horizon on that one, and I'd love to talk to you about it when when the rubber hits the road.
Well, you're always very welcome in here, Pete. And we are speaking with Pete Nichols, who's the new CEO of Parents Beyond Breakup. If listeners at home are interested in helping, and I commend you for all the new areas that Parents Beyond Breakup are going into, but what can they do if they want to help your organisation?
Well, that's a good question too. So we're going through quite a dramatic transformation at the moment. I think there's kind of three stages in an organization's lifespan. There's the entrepreneurial startup with three people around a kitchen table, or in our case, a veranda in Coffs Harbour. These guys tend to be very driven. They tend to make the magic happen, get the thing on the road and going. You then have the second phase, which we've probably just come to the end of, which is creating some kind of stable organization with some level of infrastructure behind it that makes sense of the chaos that naturally comes out of an entrepreneurial startup. You know, it's a different kind of mindset when you're starting an organization to actually making it credible and stable. And I think we're now in our third stage, which is, okay, we know what works best. We've worked that out. So now we're on a drive to hugely improve our efficiency so that we can, with the same amount of money, we can reach ever more people than we ever have in more places. And the second thing is, you know, the efficiency drive, but also the core behind that is, or the core philosophy behind that is, that we want to grow. So we're currently running at about 18 groups around the country, but I see us at the end of 2018 being somewhere in the region of 100 groups. What does that mean? For those who are out there listening, it means we need your help, whether that's on a voluntary basis, getting new groups started up. But, you know, critical to this as well is raising the funds. It's very difficult to run an organization which, you know, potentially has 300 or 400 volunteers, 100 groups. There has to be some infrastructure behind that. And so we're looking to raise probably around $1 million by the end of next year, 2018. So if there's any kind of rich benefactors out there who care about this and are listening, boy, I'd love to hear from you. There's a hotline straight through to me.
Okay, well, and it'll be on our website. And we've reached the stage of the show, Pete, where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which song you picked and why you picked it?
Well, I picked Vanilla Twilight. Now, the reason, by Owl City, and the reason I picked it is that, well, I heard this song a few years ago, and I just caught some of the lyrics, and I went onto the internet, and I looked up the lyrics, and they suddenly touched me. And the reason they did was because I mentioned I have my daughter that lives with me, but I also have a second daughter from whom I'm alienated. I haven't seen her for a very long time, and I miss her terribly. She's 12 now and living in the UK. But when I heard the lyrics of this song, it really touched me because the words are the words that I would dearly love to say to her. So it's kind of comforting to me to know that at some point she's going to hear this song, and I hope she thinks of me.
The stars lean down to kiss you, and I lie awake and miss you. Pour me a heavy dose of atmosphere. Cause I'll doze off safe and soundly, but I'll miss your arms around me. I'd send it cause I wish you were here. Because it takes two to whisper quietly. The silence isn't so bad till I look at my hands and feel sad. Cause the spaces between my fingers are right where yours fit perfectly. I'll find repose in new ways, though I haven't slept in 2 days. Cause cold nostalgia chills me to the bone. But drenched in as many
That was Vanilla Twilight, a song that means a lot to our special guest today, Pete Nichols. And I hope you'll all get a chance to check the words, the lyrics of that song, Vanilla Twilight. So it just remains for me now to thank our guest, Pete Nichols. Pete, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you very much for giving us this time.
And we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.